Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network.
You want to be able to do it all.
It's a lot of great energy.
Upbeat and going forward and excited.
Fun and juice, man. And we're going to get down to business.
From our studios in the Coin Tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is coverage of the National Football League you won't find anywhere else. This is Out of the Tunnel with AJ and Marcus on the Coin Podcast Network.
We are back, everybody. Another episode of Out of the Tunnel with AJ McCord and Marcus Greaves. Thank you guys so much for hopping on, joining us. AJ, what is up? How are we feeling? The NFL is back.
I'm feeling good, man. I'm stoked to have the NFL back. It just felt so right this weekend to be watching some football, those close games back again. It was a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did too. I thought the weirdest part, though, was just no fans in the stands. And we talked about this a little bit, you know, before the season even started, of how it's going to look, what it's going to feel like for the players. But I think they did an okay job with the crowd noise, right? I know that some stadiums had some crowds, but, you know, very, very minimal crowds. But even then, just in general, not having a packed NFL stadium, it's so weird to me. And it has to be weird for the players as well.
Oh, yeah. And I was watching that Monday night game and what is now Empower Stadium in Denver, but what used to be Mile High and will probably always be Mile High to me. And that place is so loud when there are people. And it was so weird to see the camera angle all wide and like zooming in on the players. And then there was nobody in the stands. It was so bizarre. But I talked to Jamal Adams about that after the Seahawks game. And I asked, like, how weird was it on the field? And he was like, you know what? It was pretty weird, especially like running out. But once the players got through that first series, he was like, it didn't even like cross our minds anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was saying that the players really had to turn inward to figure out like, all right, we got to hype ourselves up. We can't rely on the crowd. We got to be each other's hype man, keep each other accountable. So Jamal Adams' energy, I felt like, was even more pronounced on Sunday because he was the loudest one in the entire stadium, not just on the field.
Yeah, and that's always weird, too. I know a lot of players, even in college football, people have said it a ton of times, is that it just kind of seems like a kind of like a scrimmage, right? And these guys are going up. But it's weird, too, especially in the NFL. You know, you have the best football players in the entire world running out to empty stadiums and basically, like you said, hyping themselves up. I think it's the craziest thing. But, AJ, something that has been that the NFL has done to kind of take a step forward was kind of tackling and putting racial injustice kind of in the spotlight, right? And that's something that for anyone who's been following the NFL, the whole Colin Kaepernick thing a few years ago where it first started, he started taking a knee and he got a lot of criticism for it. A lot of people did not like that. The NFL, in a way, basically blackballed him, right? And kicked him out of the league for that, just for standing up for something like that. AJ, what did you see in the week one of the NFL that kind of stood out to you in regards to racial injustice and how the NFL is kind of putting that spotlight?
Well, I think similarly to how the NBA did it in the bubble, right? They're just making it ever present. Like there's things written on the field. The players are allowed to have victims of police brutality on the back of their helmet. We saw Russell Wilson had Breonna Taylor, Jamal Adams had Trayvon Martin. A lot of the Broncos had Elijah McClain because he was from the Denver area. And so I think, too, in addition to that, we saw every single team, every single person really react individually regarding the national anthem, which, of course, was the moment that Colin Kaepernick chose to kneel to bring attention to his cause. But I think that's the way it should be done, right? Like you should, as players, as teammates, as a whole organization, you should be able to decide how you want to react and how you want to honor the victims of police brutality or bring light to the cause, to the reality of racial injustice. But I think also it's important to say that these players do the actions so that they can talk about it later, right? Mm-hmm. Like we don't want to just talk about whatever they did, whether it's the entire team kneeling, Jamal Adams raising his fist, the Seahawks kicking the ball off, and then everyone taking a knee, sort of like we saw in basketball when Kobe Bryant passed away. But afterwards, Russell Wilson and Jamal Adams got a chance to talk about why they put the victims on their helmets that they did. And, you know, Russ talked about Breonna Taylor and how he is a father of a daughter, a father of a young Black woman, and how that one really started to hit home for him a little bit more because of his 3-year-old daughter. And Jamal Adams said, you know, Trayvon Martin was the first victim of police brutality that really stuck out to him as to the reality, really made it real for him. And so I think it's important to talk about what these guys are doing on the field in those kind of high spotlight moments, but as important to talk about what they say after the game, because there's only like 20 of us on those post-game interviews. Mm-hmm. And those are the moments that are really important to share why they did what they did, what they want to talk about. So for me, the one thing that I want to make sure you know, our listeners hear is when Jamal Adams, he was one of the ones who raised a fist during the national anthem, and he was asked why he did that. And he said, you know, I am a proud, strong Black man, and I want that to be known. I am proud to be Black. I am strong. And so I'm going to stand with my fist raised.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And another thing that caught my attention was Derrick Henry's suit, right? His suit had the names of the victims from police brutality and things like that. Just seeing how each individual player is going to kind of express how they want to tackle this, you know, racial injustice. But as a whole in the NFL, it's really cool to see that they're finally starting to shift away from it being a bad thing, right? Which didn't make a lot of sense. You know, me being a Black man, in a way, it kind of offended me because I was like, why does that make you guys so upset when all these guys are trying to do is voice their opinion of real problems in America? So as much as, you know, football is a great sport and people love to watch it, they don't love to always see the true meaning behind a lot of the things that these players do. Again, people have to remember and realize, yes, these guys make millions of dollars, but they're still people. They still go home and they still face problems. A lot of these guys, obviously African-American men, they still face these problems of if you get pulled over, right, you're going to be nervous. There's some, you know, you never know what's going to happen. So I'm excited to see what the NFL is going to do moving forward and kind of how they're going to tackle this and how they're going to put that and continue to put that in the spotlight. But AJ, week one in the NFL was absolutely crazy. It was everything I wanted. Again, maybe it was just because finally have some football back, but we have some interesting headlines. In week one, obviously, there's always going to be something every single week that catches everyone's attention. But first and foremost, again, Mr. Tom Brady, one of the best quarterbacks of all time, played his first game with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It was weird to see him out there in a different uniform. But on top of that, it did not go as planned. They did take the L to the Saints, 34-23. Tom Brady didn't have a terrible game. He was 23 for 36, 239 yards, 2 touchdowns. 2 interceptions compared to, you know, Drew Brees. Even then, Drew Brees didn't have a great game either. 18 for 30, 160 yards and 2 touchdowns. But, AJ, how weird was it for you to see Tom Brady not in a Patriots uniform?
Dude, so bizarre. bizarre to see Tom Brady in Tampa Bay colors. But, I mean, I think, you know, Tom Brady is Tom Brady, and I'm not convinced that after week one where his team lost, that is not still the case. You know, it's not like he went against a rookie or an inexperienced team or maybe a team with the new quarterback themselves. He went about against Drew Brees and the freaking Saints. That team has been good for a long time. So it was not an easy match out of the gate for Tom Brady. So I'm not willing to say that he's like, you know, not the Tom Brady that we've known him to be for like 100 years now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's just, it takes time to adjust. I mean, especially when you have someone like Tom Brady. Tom Brady is so elite at that position and he knows what he's doing, but it takes time to mesh, especially you can't just throw, it's the same thing. You can't just throw some of the best players in the world on the same team and say, all right, you guys are going to win every game by 50. I mean, the guys are going to need to adjust to each other. They're going to have to get the timing right from the quarterbacks or the receivers. On top of that, you just have to mesh in general as an offense and find a way to basically get the ball rolling, because in the first drive of the game, they really did. I mean, they came out of the gate, they scored 7 points, they went down the field. And I mean, they the drive looked good, and I was like, oh no, is this how Tampa Bay is going to be? Like, are we all in for a long season with Tampa Bay blowing everybody out by 50? But then you kind of saw the inexperience and the fact that these guys haven't played together. So, I mean, you have Mike Evans, Gronk, you have Fournette, obviously Tom Brady, you have O.J. Howard, even LeSean McCoy, Mike Evans. I mean, a ton of talent. But it's guys have to find their roles, guys have to fit in their roles. And, it's week one of the NFL. It's not like you're going to come out and have the best game of your entire life because, quite frankly, these guys didn't have a preseason. You know, so it's like they can't knock the rust off. And especially for someone like Tom Brady, who is in such a mode all the time of, okay, this is my routine. I have my off-season training program, and then I have preseason, and I do this, and I do that. And then finally, it's game day. I'm on the field. Football is a game of routine, right? And so if you knock those guys out of routine, it's going to take them a little bit to kind of get back into shape and get back into just that football mindset. And just you kind of become robotic after a while because you're so used to it. But once that's kind of broken and you got to restart everything, it's going to take a little bit. Again, I'm not too worried about it, AJ. I know you said you weren't, but someone else did return to the NFL and took Mr. Tom Brady's spot with the Patriots as a starting quarterback, and that is Cam Newton. AJ, give me your thoughts on Cam Newton's first game with the Pats.
He looked good. Mm. He looked like, I mean, from the moment he showed up in that yellow suit, you knew – homeboy was coming in loud and proud and ready to dominate that game. And I thought it was so impressive. You can talk about whether Tom can succeed without Bill without Tom, whatever. But Bill Belichick deserves some credit for taking a quarterback who is so vastly different than the quarterbacks he's had leading his team for, like I said, about 100 years and totally being able to play call for Cam Newton specifically. The guy had two rushing touchdowns. I don't know how many rushing touchdowns Tom Brady had in his entire career at New England, but I'm going to go ahead and say it was probably, if not about two, not many more.
Yeah, I can definitely agree. And I mean, Cam Newton, first game with the Patriots, first game in a new system. He was 15 for 19, 155 yards. No touchdowns through the air, but like you said, AJ, two touchdowns on the ground on 15 carries and 75 yards. The thing with Bill Belichick and the Patriots is that people say, you know, it's the system. The system's always going to get you right. Well, yeah, obviously, because that's what you need, right? You're not going to throw guys out there who are not good at what they do. So Bill Belichick obviously saw, okay, Cam Newton, we know he has a good arm. And we know that he can run. So we're not going to make him one-dimensional like Tom Brady was when he was in New England, where obviously his throwing is his strength. Instead, they're going to say, okay, we can spread the ball around. We can get the ball out. We can have Cam run the ball. We still have Sony Michel. Obviously Julian Edelman. I mean, they have a ton of talent and guys that know their role. And Bill Belichick has always been so great at basically just putting guys in the position to succeed. And so I'm happy to see Cam back out there, AJ. Like you said, you knew he was coming out with some serious business once you step out in a yellow suit and a fedora hat. I mean, I'm not saying I would really buy that outfit, but I think I would buy that outfit. But
I also need to correct myself. Apparently, Tom Brady has run for about almost 30.
He's run for almost 30 touchdowns.
Yeah, I know. In New England, over 19 years. So take that for what it's worth. But I had to look that up because I don't want to get any people who think Tom Brady's a goat. I don't want to hear from you after this podcast. He did run a little bit, but the point being,
Newton ran
a whole lot more.
It's a lot different. AJ, so success in New England, one team that has, for some odd reason, just not figured it out for I don't know how many years now, is the Cleveland Browns. I have no idea what is wrong. Cleveland got blown out by Baltimore 38-6. Obviously, Lamar Jackson, he's super talented. He was 20 for 25, 275 yards, three touchdowns. I mean, he rushed seven carries, 45 yards. We already know what he can do, you know, through the air and on the ground. But Cleveland, AJ, I just don't understand. I mean, I want to get your thoughts on this because it seems like no matter how much talent they have, no matter what's going on, like if – you get Odell Beckham feeling good and everyone's positive. They all have confidence. It seems like they just can't consistently win. I mean, what are your thoughts on the Browns? And basically, is there any hope for them?
I don't know what's wrong with the Browns. It doesn't seem to be the talent on the roster. But like we were talking about with the Patriots, just because you throw a bunch of good players together does not mean you win a bunch of football games. And that has been the case. And I don't know if it's a matter of the players not being able to understand or get on the same page with the scheme, or if it's a coaching issue or what. But the poor Browns and their fans, I'm sorry.
They've been going through it for a while. And that's the thing, too, is, like we said, the talent is not the problem on the roster. Baker Mayfield, in his first season, he looked pretty solid, right? He looked pretty good, and you kind of had a feeling that, okay, maybe this is the guy that's going to finally be the consistent and playmaking Browns quarterback that they've wanted for so long. He went 21 for 39, 189 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. That touchdown did come in the first quarter, so maybe it felt a little better. But, AJ, again, the talent, it's hard for me to understand. Kareem Hunt, he had 13 carries, 72 yards. Nick Chubb, 10 carries, 60 yards. And, again, you have someone like Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, David Njoku. Those guys, those are all great playmakers. If you put them on any other team, it seems like they're going to be the standout guy, without a doubt, on the offense. But, I mean, Odell, 3 catches, 22 yards. Njoku, 3 catches for 50 yards and a touchdown. Then Jarvis Landry, 5 catches for 61 yards, and that's it. So, you can see kind of the offensive production. You can see that they have the talent and they can spread the ball around, but maybe it's coaching. Maybe it's the fact that they just don't have a winning culture. And at the end of the day, winners win and losers lose. And that sounds extremely cliche, but that's just kind of how it is. If you have a losing culture and you do not have somebody who can break that, then that's just how it's going to be. It's the honest truth, you know? So until someone can go in and truly change the culture of Cleveland, I really don't think that they're going to be able to break out of that slump. But
yeah, I think we piled on Cleveland enough. I feel so bad for their fans. The other person, we're not going to pile on, but we got to at least mention when we're talking about top headlines, Stephen Gostkowski.
Oh,
I know. I felt so bad. I tweeted this out too. I said, kicking is the hardest position in professional sports and you will not convince me otherwise. Oh, I don't care. Yeah. It is so, so much pressure on only one thing. And I had someone respond to me and they were like, yeah, it's sort of like shooting free throws in basketball. And I was like, but they only kick. It's not like you have someone, you don't have a designated free throw shooter go out there and like, do it every single time someone gets fouled. This is his only job. And this dude is a Hall of Fame kicker.
Yeah.
Like, we are likely going to see him in the Hall of Fame. And on Monday night, my goodness, could you have had the only way it could have been worse is if he missed that final field goal. But 3 missed field goals, a missed PAT, and then it comes down to a field goal. You want to talk about Mike Vrabel having some confidence in his kicker.
Yeah.
Because I cannot say that I would have necessarily thrown Stevie out there after that kind of night. That's a night that you're like, well, maybe not today.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, with kicking is that, like you said, people are going to look at it and be like, well, that's your one job. You're right. That is the one job. But there's so many pieces when it comes to kicking that, like, fall into place. Like, you got to get the snap right. On top of that, it's the timing. On top of that, does the holder have the ball spin the right way? I mean, there's so much that goes into
it. Places out, like, Dan.
Yeah, you got to be like a well-oiled machine. But sometimes, AJ, you're right. I was happy I was a running back because I would never want to be a kicker. Never. Because you miss one field goal, especially, like you said, if you would have missed that game-winning field goal, wow. I could not even imagine. That, like, stresses me out. I'm starting to sweat even thinking about that because
– I know. That gave me anxiety.
I can only imagine the hate mail that you'll get. But he did finish the job, which is the most important thing. They did get the win. So, at the end of the day, as long as you get the job done some way, somehow, again, winners win and losers lose. It's found a way to win. Regardless, though, you're right. I would never, ever, ever want to be a kicker. But, you know, a position I would love to be is a wide receiver, and that's our next headline. Mr. DeAndre Hopkins had a field day for the Cardinals. He had 14 receptions, 151 yards. AJ, talking about the NFC West, obviously with the Seahawks being in that division, that's going to be a guy that they have to key on. And we already know he's probably the best receiver in football. But he just put that on full display, what he can do against a very, very good defense in the San Francisco 49ers. And Arizona got that win 24-20 to open up the season.
Yeah, Hopkins looked good. The Cardinals look scary. Kyler Murray, I think, is going to take a step this year because I think you saw him figure out, you know, a little bit sort of that like Russell Wilson-esque where it's like, I don't, just because I can run doesn't mean I have to run all the time. Yeah. And you're seeing the Cardinals figure out how to utilize him to the best of his talent, which again, does not mean always run the ball just because the dude can scramble. So I think I was as concerned with the fact that the Cardinals called a wonderful, wonderful game for their talent as I was the talent that actually showed up on the field.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And just seeing the, something that you said that hit right on the spot was the fact that the Cardinals are starting to learn how to use Kyler Murray, much like the Seahawks did after a while, because now you put some weapons around someone like Kyler Murray, he doesn't have to go all Russell Wilson where he thinks he has to do everything, where he's going to hike the ball, he's got to break five tackles, he has to, you know, juke a couple more people out, bomb the ball down the field or whatever it is, right? Just to make that play or just to make a first down. Now you have, you know, you have Kenyon Drake at running back. He had 16 carries for 60 yards and a touchdown. He's still an elite guy. Kyler Murray, again, on the ground though, he had 13 carries, 91 yards and a touchdown. And then now you add DeAndre Hopkins into the equation. Now you have all levels. You have passing, you have running, you have a solid offense, and now you just need to consistently call the right plays and put guys in the right position. So Arizona's going to look scary, AJ, which is not very good for the Seahawks, but we're going to dive into the Seahawks and how they look in week one. We're going to take a quick break. We'll bring back the Seahawks.
Everybody, executive producer Ian Costello here, coming to you from the Work From Home Coin Podcast Studios. When we started our podcasts back in February of 2019, we had no idea that we would end up here. Now, a year and a half later, tens of thousands of you are listening to hundreds of our podcasts, and we need to make some changes to grow even further. That's why, starting this week, you can find all of the Coin Podcasts in one place. The brand new Coin Podcast Network. From Beaver Smack to Writer's Block. From your weather to our constant coverage of the coronavirus pandemic and the protests in Portland. It is all available in one place. So, to keep hearing the podcasts you already love and to discover more of our exclusive audio content, head to coin.com/podcasts or search Coin, that's K-O-I-N, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or Podbean. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Out of the Tunnel with AJ and Marcus on the Coin Podcast Network.
Well, this was a really successful first week for us in terms of, you know, getting on the road for the first time. There's so much behind the scenes that you can't see in preparation and in managing the whole process. And we did a really good job with it. We made it through it and all that. It was just a very important time for us, and it just happened to capture, I think, the moments of how important it is to share your stories and bare your soul. There's nothing like that in emotional exchange, and when people are really allowing themselves to be vulnerable and to speak their piece and all, and to go along with that, when there's an atmosphere where it's okay, and the vulnerability is kind of rewarded in a sense, where guys get the feeling that it's okay to say what they got to say, and it just changes. It can change the dynamics of relationships. And I don't think.
All right, welcome back to Out of the Tunnel with AJ and Marcus. So that was Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll, and he was talking about the chemistry in Seattle in week one. He mentioned, we saw it on the field, Marcus, and he just credited that to all those Zoom meetings. Mm-hmm. And I've heard the Seahawks talk about this all summer. I've heard them talk about it all through camp. They have just talked about how those Zoom meetings were actually such a critical part of why this team had the success that they did on Sunday, because they got to know each other. And Pete Carroll has brought in speakers like Steve Kerr, Will Ferrell crashed a meeting. I mean, this is like, these guys have become a family. And I think that when you become a family in the off season, there were already so many pieces on the Seahawks that have known each other for so long, but integrating someone like Jamal Adams and DK Metcalf learning to swim because Russell Wilson taught him. These are things that just matter when you show up on the field. And I think the biggest thing to take away from week one for the Seattle Seahawks is A, they did exactly what they've been doing in practice, which without a preseason, that is all you can ask for in week one. You can work on whatever you want to work on, but it is so critical to at least everything that you've practiced show up in a game. And then I think secondly, this team has depth, they have chemistry, and they are dangerous because they trust each other when they need to. Example one, 4th and 5, Russell Wilson hears the Falcons chirping after the 3rd down and says, you know what? Let's go for it. Yeah. Tells DK Metcalf to leg it out and throws a bomb for a touchdown on 4th and 5. That is chemistry, that is trust, and the Seahawks say that it began and continues in all of these Zoom meetings, because I think you know this, Marcus, from having played in college. In the off season, they're everywhere, right? Yeah. Like, I follow all these guys on Instagram and social media, and, you know, you see one person in Spain, you see one person in Mexico, you see someone else in New Zealand, and no wonder. They just don't have that same time to get connected. But on Zoom, the beauty of it is that it makes the world a lot smaller place. So no matter where these guys were, they could be on these off-season meetings. They could extend that get-to-know-you time. And you saw it show up in week one.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to hit off a little bit what you said, AJ, just the fact of having the chemistry, trusting one another. I mean, it's a lot easier for, say, a quarterback or a running back, in my instance, to know that, okay, if I have a stretch play to the right, I got to read that far tackle to the right. Okay, I'm going to trust that he, or if I do trust him, I should say, I know he's going to get that block and he's going to open up that hole that I need because that's his assignment. I trust him with everything. And so I'm going to do that. I'm going to run straight to him. And so that's why we saw the offense click so easily, is because you could definitely tell these guys trust each other. But if they didn't trust each other, put it in perspective of, you know, same play, a stretch play to the right, I got to read that outside tackle and say, he doesn't make his block ever. I know for a fact he never makes his block. So as soon as I get the ball, I'm not even going to go where I need to go because I don't trust him to make that play. And so instead, I'm going to cut in, and then it's going to end up, you know, maybe being a loss or maybe a gain of 1 where it should have been a gain of 10 or a touchdown, right? So just seeing the chemistry and seeing how these guys just unfold for each other, basically, and how they take that next step as a team that is in chemistry, I mean, it's impressive to see. That's why we were saying, AJ, so many times where this offense is going to be really, really good because those guys trust each other. And exactly like you said, 4th and 5, let's go for it because, Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll trust these guys. So, okay, DK, Metcalf, we are counting on you to get open. And that happened just like that, and it resulted in a touchdown. Those are things you can't really coach. That just comes with time and being with each other and just trusting each other over time. And it's going to be really exciting to see what the Seahawks are going to do moving forward.
The other way that you could tell they really trusted each other was, it's not like Wilson is going back to the same target over and over and over again. Sometimes that's taking advantage of a matchup, but oftentimes when you see a stat sheet after the game and there's like 2 guys who've made catches the entire game, that's because Wilson doesn't necessarily have the trust in everybody to distribute the ball evenly. Mm-hmm. Not the case for Seattle. 9 different guys had catches for the Seahawks on Sunday. Here's Russ talking about just how dangerous that makes them.
Well, I think we did a great job. We got a lot of great players. We were super dialed in all,
all off season. You know, we spent a lot of time on Zoom calls. We talked a lot about a ball and life and everything else. And we got a lot of smart guys. I think, like I said to you guys, I think earlier, you know, I feel like we're smarter than ever. Obviously, we got great talent. You know, everybody caught the ball today, and that's what we want. We want to spread the ball around, get the ball a lot of different guys. You know, we wanted to be to be aggressive in our approach just in general. I think also, too, we wanted to be able to run the ball well, too, as well, which we were able to do when we did. And so it felt great.
So again, you hear Russ talk about how critical those off-season Zoom meetings were to get everybody incorporated, including somebody like Greg Olsen, who is a massive talent, but a first-time Seattle Seahawk, and who has been in a different system for almost his entire career, and he catches a touchdown. First game with the Seattle Seahawks. That is just going to be so important to have a balanced offense, to have an offense that we've talked about, can trust each other.
And just like having, you know, the saying that they have, like, let Russ cook. I mean, Russ finished with, he was 31 for 35, 322 yards and 4 touchdowns. He had just as many touchdowns as he did incompletions, AJ. So that's phenomenal, obviously. But just seeing what this offense can do, that's week one. And again, week one is always the sloppiest week, without question. And on top of that, having the no offseason, basically, having no preseason or anything like that, they're kind of coming out right out of the gate. And like you said, you've been to some of the mock, you know, the mock games and the scrimmages that they had, but you said that they came out and they did exactly what they did in practice, right? And ran their stuff right. And it resulted obviously in a big time win against the Falcons, but just seeing what Russ can do finally with a bunch of weapons around him, that trust, that chemistry, AJ, he's finally going to be able to cook. But like we always say, letting Russ cook does not mean, you know, Russ hiking the ball again, breaking 10 tackles, and then sprinting, you know, 15 yards downfield for a first down. It means Russ is now being able to have a little more control, have a little more like, okay, I can take a breath, basically. I don't have to do everything by myself. I can trust my other guys, and then I can play a lot more comfortably. And then at the end of the day, you can kind of see sometimes in the past that the Seahawks were a little more conservative with Russ, and that's why people were kind of getting frustrated. But people have to understand, listen, when Russ was the only one generating offense, you need him for the fourth quarter. It's not like, you know, you have a ton of guys you can just sub in and out. I mean, if Russell Wilson was out of the game in the past couple seasons, you know, they're not going anywhere offensively. So you honestly just have to – you had to conserve his energy and make sure in the fourth quarter, if it was a close game, that's where you can strike. And hopefully he can pull that out, right? But now he can spread the love around. He doesn't have to be the guy in control the entire time. Say DK Metcalf is feeling it. Listen, Russ, sometimes all you have to do if you're Russ is take a step back and bomb the ball to him, because if DK Metcalf is feeling it, he's feeling it. And if Chris Carson's feeling it in the run game, he's feeling it in the run game. So they just have to continue to do those things. Let Russ cook. But on top of that, now a lot more pressure is off his shoulders and the offense is running a lot more smoothly.
And I think, like we've talked about, let Russ cook does not mean air it out, pull a Mike Leach and do the air raid every single game. It just means open up the playbook and let him use all of the ingredients, including his receivers, including Chris Carson, including Carlos Hyde, including his own legs. But I think, too, some of those dink passes that we saw to Chris Carson, those are actually really critical to have a running back with great hands, so that it shows up in the passing game, but really, is it, like, you know, it's also part of the run game. So I think that's just critical to let Russ cook. But again, doesn't mean an air raid every single week. It just means you have trust in every avenue of your offense, run game, pass game, scramble ability. Perfect. Absolutely. They have that now. So they're also backed by a pretty darn good defense. And this year, the Seahawks defense, I felt like, was more hype than they've been since the Legion of Boom broke up, with the addition of Jamal Adams coming in hot, coming in loud, coming in excited to be a Seattle Seahawk, where he says he plans to retire.
Ooh.
Okay. So he and Bobby Wagner, fantastic game. Here is Jamal Adams talking about what it means to be on the field with Bobby Wagner.
he's told you guys we've always had a respect from afar away for each other, and you know, just having us, you know, out there, you know, together, it's like Batman and Robin, you know what I mean? So it's not even just Bobby, man, just so many guys out there. The whole defense was flying around the ball, talking noise, just, you know, having fun. Like I said, we had a lot of mistakes, but at the end of the day, we were running to the ball and, you know, creating stops and you know, trying to create turnovers. So that's what it's about. Obviously, a lot of cleaning up to do, but I'm just happy to be a part of this defense, be a part of this organization. And like I said, we just got to keep our head down. It's only one game, and keep stacking, keep getting better.
It may be only one game, Marcus, but boy, did Jamal Adams look as good as advertised. He was absolutely everywhere. He had a game-high 12 tackles for the Seahawks. He had a few QB hurries. He had a sack. He had a couple tackles for a loss. I mean, he did everything you could ask of him. And Bobby Wagner remains the staple of Seattle's defense. And I was just impressed. Are there ways that the secondary needs to get better? Absolutely. Matt Ryan threw for over 400 yards. Mm-hmm. Not ideal. Yeah. But a win is a win. Bend don't break. I think the Seahawks fans should be pretty excited with the addition of Jamal Adams and with how good, like you said, week one's very sloppy, almost always. And so the defense had some sloppy moments, but Jamal Adams, I do not think did.
Yeah, I mean, just in general, they looked good. And the fact of Jamal Adams is, listen, it's not his defense, but being as talented as he is, he wants it to be his defense, which is then going to elevate everyone else's game, which that just happens when you have such a great player like Bobby Wagner, who is probably the best linebacker in the entire NFL. So when you have someone like that, then you bring another top player in the NFL in on defense in Jamal Adams, it's just going to raise everyone else's game because they're going to hold each other accountable. AJ, like we heard, Batman, Robin. I'm not really sure which one's Batman or which one's Robin between those two, but I think it's going to change, you know, game by game. You know, maybe one day, you know, Batman is Jamal Adams because he has a freak game, but then the next one it's Bobby Wagner because he has a freak game. But at the end of the day, if you're a Seahawks fan, you have to feel good because you have options. Which one's going to be your best player, right? I know a ton of defenses do not have that in the league. They only have one solid guy that's like, this is our best player without question. But that's the thing is now in Seattle, it's, okay, we know Bobby Wagner is probably our best guy, but Jamal Adams, if there's any room in between them, it's not much by any stretch, right? So one guy can have a freakish game this game, one guy can have a freakish game that game. Just in general, having the option which one it's going to be is something that, like I said, not a lot of defenses have. So they should be pretty excited about that.
They really should be. So we kind of have gone over a few of the key players, but now it's time to go into your keys to the game segment, Marcus, which I'm always super excited about. You do this for us on Game On. You always post it on your Twitter, which is Marcus_Greaves.
Yes.
But I want to talk about it now because I think you bring just really great intellect and football perspective to this from somebody who has played the game for 2 decades. So first and foremost, Russell Wilson, of course, the first key, you have to start with Russ. How critical is it to let Russ cook?
It is extremely critical, and kind of like what we were saying, just let him do his thing, right? Let the offense flow. Don't try and out-scheme everybody, right? Because sometimes when you have those top players and that talent around him, sometimes you just have to kind of push him out there and say, okay, this is kind of the idea we have for the offense, but Russ, get out there and do what we know you can do. Spread the ball around. You don't have to do everything on your own. Now, if it's a dump pass to Chris Carson, then it's a dump pass to Chris Carson. Let Chris Carson pick up a touchdown. Let him pick up 12, 15 yards. Let him pick up 5 or 4. Regardless, just spread the ball around. You have Greg Olsen. You have DK Metcalf. You have Tyler Lockett. It's just so important now that you balance out the offense and do not become one-dimensional, because eventually, if Russ is going to throw the ball 35 times a game, then teams are going to start to key in on that and say, okay, well, we don't have to worry about, you know, any run game at all. So now we're going to scheme entirely around the pass, and that's going to make it a lot tougher for Russ to make those kind of plays. But if you balance it out, let Russ do his thing, figure out which guys need to go certain places, how the offense should be rolling, then they're going to be in a lot better position to win more games if they do that.
I agree 1,000%. So other side of the ball, key number two, talk about the defense. You liked a lot of it, but there's still something that concerns you. What is that?
That's the defensive line. And we kind of talked about this. And this has kind of been a topic of discussion for the Seahawks for a long time. Like, they had Jadeveon Clowney last season, but even then, he did not perform up to the expectations I think a lot of us had for him. I mean, when you don't have a defensive line that can bring that kind of pressure, that's where we're going to see guys like Matt Ryan throw for 450 yards and 2 touchdowns. I mean, that's a freakish game for a quarterback, right? That's still a
Especially to lose.
Yeah, and just to lose. So if they just imagine if they had a guy or two step up on the defensive line, what that could have meant, you know, what that could have meant. That could have meant, I mean, Atlanta might not even score 10 points, right? But it's the fact that he has so much time in the pocket, which with no pressure from the defensive line, it's going to make it a lot harder for the linebackers to make their reads. It's going to make a lot. It's going to make it a lot harder for the defensive backs to cover their receivers, because it does not matter how good you are. You can be Jamal Adams, Richard Sherman. You could be Deion Sanders. It does not matter. If you give a quarterback that much time, someone is eventually going to get open. So I want to see the defensive line take that next step, and someone has to step up in their game against the Patriots.
Yeah, so this next key, I'm calling you Marcus McScrooge over. Because
let's hear it.
This is like the Seahawks are danged if they do, danged if they don't. So they let Russ cook. He goes 31 of 35. But the rushing game is a key for you and a bit concerning.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I'm a little Scrooge about this because being a former running back, obviously, maybe I'm a little biased. But just in general, again, AJ, you said it earlier in the show, sometimes you just have to go with what works. And if Russ is feeling it, you have to let him just go and make those kind of plays. Again, he had just as many touchdowns as incompletions, so don't go away from that. But like I was kind of echoing is, you don't want to become one-dimensional. You always want to make sure you have a balanced offense, because they always say if you can run the ball, it's going to open up the pass. If you can pass the ball, it's going to open up the run. Just keep the defense honest and on their toes. So, listen, who am I to tell you that that if Russ only has 4 incompletions, that you shouldn't keep throwing the ball? Right, you should absolutely keep throwing the ball, especially if you're going to do numbers like that and make those kind of big plays. But later on in the season, like I said, teams are going to key in on that. So you just want to make sure you balance it out. You make sure you can at least stay more honest to the run, because, again, they did run the ball 20 times, but, I mean, only 84 yards. I mean, that's not going to get the job done in the NFL, right? It's going to get the job done if you have Russ throwing those kind of numbers. But let's be honest, not every week Russ is going to have a freakish game like that. He could have an off game, and you're going to have to put a little more emphasis maybe on that run game. So you don't want to just find that, you know, that brick wall where you're like, oh man, well, now the pass isn't working, so hopefully we can get the run going in week 5, because we haven't really been keeping it honest on the run game. So I just want to see them be a little more balanced. I know I might be sounding like a Scrooge. I know, darn if they do, darn if they don't. I understand. But with that being said, a little more balance is going to make me a little more happy.
Fair enough. I'm throwing this out there. I'm trying to put myself in Pete Carroll's shoes. And we all know, or at least I feel, that Bill Belichick is one of the most, like, diabolical, evil genius-esque coaches in the NFL. So what if Pete Carroll was just, like, putting this entire air raid on tape so that on Sunday night when the Patriots come to CenturyLink Field and he just runs the ball every play, Bill Belichick is like, wait, what? What if this is a master plan to not give Bill Belichick the tape that he can use to his advantage against the Seahawks on Sunday?
That's true. Bill Belichick does come off as like the evil genius. So maybe you're right. Maybe that's
coach.
It. And if that's the case, then AJ, maybe you should take the analyst role, and I'll kind of just, you know, this will be your podcast, and I'll kind of be in the background, you know, just saying yes or no. But
if that's correct, right. I'm taking Pete Carroll's job.
You're right. And so that could be it. Honestly, that could be it. But just in general, you know, since we're already talking about the Patriots, that could be their plan. But AJ, I want to get your quick thoughts on just the Patriots in general when they take on the Seahawks. What do you think the Seahawks need to do? Or more importantly, I mean, Cam is going to be a handful. So what do you think the Seahawks need to do in order to beat the Patriots?
I think this is just going to be a matter of two of the best teams who are coached by two of the best coaches with two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And I think someone has to find that edge early. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to come down to who gets just one more stop. than the other team, because I'm anticipating a bit of a shootout. So your second key, talking about who's going to bring that pressure against Cam Newton, similarly to Russell Wilson, you cannot give him time to get comfortable either throwing the ball or scrambling, because you know he has the ability to do both. And he is a large human to try and bring to the ground. So yeah. Once he gets ahead of steam, there's very little stopping him. So
yeah.
Someone, whether that is Jamal Adams, Bobby Wagner, Benson Mayoa, someone has got to make Cam Newton uncomfortable and get him out of rhythm quickly. They cannot wait until the third quarter. Got to bring the heat in the first, which I think this is where having somebody like Jamal Adams on your defense is going to show up, not just on the field, but as a hype man. I think that's going to be critical.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just to echo the last point I have is Bill Belichick always comes ready to play, right? Like we said, he always right. schemes extremely well. The system has been proven to work. We're just going to, like you said, see two of the best coaches go head-to-head. So talent is going to be there on both sides. Who's going to coach the better game? That's the most important question. So it's going to be interesting to see. But, AJ, I know that before we close up the podcast, you found some good story about some – just in general, a feel-good story, I guess, to close the podcast. What is that?
Yeah, so this is something that I'm trying to do every single week for you guys, just because there's so much going on, right? We make all the jokes about 2020 and the year that it has been, but we're trying to find some positive things to leave you guys with. So this one is from the former Ducks, current Seahawks safety, Ugo Amadi. Over the summer, he organized not one, but two backpack drives, one in Seattle and one in his hometown of Nashville, Tennessee, where he donated nearly 100 backpacks at each elementary school filled with school supplies and face masks for the kiddos, which is just something that I think is really cool, especially if you think about from a parent's perspective. This has been a really hard year.
Yeah.
And taking away not only the financial burden of having to provide school supplies and masks and backpacks, but also the time that that takes. And I don't know any parent under normal circumstances who's like, yeah, I got all the time in the world. And I feel like right now, when you are a parent, you are a teacher, you are a chauffeur, you are probably musical instrument teacher, sometimes you're the coach as well. That's just something that is really kind. And Ugo also delivered this note with each of his backpacks, which I think is something that as a kid in elementary school, getting a handwritten note from an NFL player is probably something incredibly impactful. So this is a note that he put along with the backpack and explaining why he sort of did the backpack drive. He said, "We all come from different places and backgrounds, but it doesn't mean we have to limit ourselves to these circumstances. I am now playing in the National Football League for the Seattle Seahawks. You can be whatever you want in this world, no matter who believes in you or not. I love you kids, and I want to help you out this upcoming school year by providing you with school supplies. Hopefully when you get older, you can do the same thing for the next generation to come." I think that has a huge impact on kids.
Yeah,
having someone like an NFL player say, "I believe in you."
Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, these guys, they have a million other things going on, but the fact that they take the time out of their day and use their platform as they should and impact the lives of these kids like they have been. I mean, that's something that when I played football, that was always my favorite part. Always doing the community outreach stuff, kind of just connecting with all these, you know, the younger kids and trying to be that role model that they need and that they want in their life. I mean, things like that. It's the game of football. Obviously, we all love it to death. But like we said, to start off the podcast, there's some things that are just bigger than others. Right. And as much as I loved football, like I said, running out of the tunnel at Oregon State, there's almost nothing better. But, you know, just seeing the look on these kids' faces when you do something, when they see that you're a college football player, NFL football player, they lose it and you love it just because you see how much joy it brings them. So hopefully that feel-good story is something that will lighten up your guys' day a little bit. AJ, thank you for that. But that's all we have for you guys on this episode of Out of the Tunnel. You can always find AJ and myself on Twitter and Instagram at AJ_McCord. You can follow me at Marcus_Reeves. Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Out of the Tunnel with AJ and Marcus. We will talk to you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to the Coin Podcast Network. You can listen to more great Coin podcasts on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Please listen, download, subscribe, and review.